takes us now to item 3B, presentation from staff.
We did our best, Ed, to give you some Seattle weather as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Now the jury perfectly set up the segue from the Veris report to the staff report.
You guys rehearsed that.
I would love to say we did, but unfortunately it's serendipity. This is the first time you're seeing the staff level report. We discussed this format back in November where we talked about, you know, what do we want to accomplish to complement what you're receiving in the Veris quarterly report. And I think a lot of the conversation came down to, we want to talk about implementation of each functional sub-portfolio. So what does each functional sub-portfolio do for us? And also talk about the efficacy of the implementation. Is the diversification that we're going through, is the fact that we're deploying risk in different spaces, is that working versus a very simplistic implementation approach? And I've asked Jeff to join me to talk a little bit about each one of these sub-portfolios and what the goals are that we laid out here. But just a quick recap for the trustees. This report is intended to provide you with the thesis behind each sub-portfolio and the thesis behind each manager stocking those sub-portfolios. So when there's a question about significant outperformance or underperformance versus a peer group, we can say, is that peer group representative of what we are expecting that manager to deliver to Cicera? We might have somebody who is intended to deliver a high cash flow that might not be reflected in the peer group, somebody who's intended to provide downside protection that might not be reflected in the peer group. So it's just provide a little bit more context around what we're expecting out of each sub-portfolio and about each component manager there. So you're going to see on the top line here, you know, what are we expecting from each portfolio. I'm going to let Jeff talk a little bit about that, but you know, just keep in mind as we go through this, we're really measuring how well are we implementing the function, and how well are we doing on is our diversification working? There's always a simple approach. Is our approach, which can tend to be a little bit more complex, are we being rewarded for that decision? So,
and this is a report that we're looking at going forward on a quarterly basis. This will be included with a quarterly performance report that you're used to seeing from Veris. As we talked about last year, you know, when we look at measures of success and, you know, when we're looking less like our peers because of the asset allocation that we have, what are some other areas that we need to look at? This, I think, helps to complete that puzzle somewhat. And this, so this is also the first one you've seen of these. I mean, you saw a draft back in November, but this is kind of the first go live copy. So if there's questions or things you want to see different or anything like that, you know, we can definitely tweak this.
That's a great point. I mean, this will be somewhat of an iterative process to get through the discussion. What's working for you in the report? Where are the unanswered questions? We're very open to changing this to meet the trustee needs going forward.
Sure. So, just as in terms of kind of a quick comment on structure, you know, Ed's report will talk about the total fund characteristics, line item each manager, peer rankings, that sort of thing. This report really kind of, it does discuss the total fund in aggregate, but we think of it more as the wake behind the boat. We want to describe the functions and how they're working, the metrics that we assign to each one of those functions to say, what can we give you as trustees as handles to say, is the liquidity portfolio working? Is growth working? Is risk diversifying working? And when you bring those all together, the total fund has a profile. But the total fund profile isn't necessarily the targeted outcome. We say if each function is working well, the total fund works well. So, you know, the first page of this report, we line up the objectives, the measurements, and then we'll kind of go deeper into each one of those. When we talk about immunizing the near-term benefit payments, that's the liquidity portfolio. And the handles that you would look to say, you know, are we achieving the liquidity portfolio's objectives of being a low-risk, cash-flowing portfolio? The metrics we would assign there would be the size of the program, the quality of the program in terms of a credit rating, the duration, which would measure effectively risk in the program, interest rate risk, and then how closely are we actually matching the cash flows. That'll get discussed further after this presentation in the liquidity deep dive. But on page 3 of the portfolio, you can see how we've lined up all of those metrics along the where we think you as trustees can provide the oversight there. This is where we would say, you know, if you're looking at this data and you see something that doesn't look right, so to speak, if you see our average quality being low, that's a question as trustees you could say, why do we have a low quality portfolio to meet a you know, very high level need of the program? So we want to provide a little bit more insight onto that sort of things, and that's what this report is here to do. So I didn't mean to jump ahead to the liquidity portfolio. While we did talk about the total fund, page two, we do give a little bit of color on what the total fund's doing in aggregate. And relative to the very simple policy index of saying our total fund is relatively complex. We go into some illiquid investments. We have things that are much beyond a kind of standard investment process in terms of the managers we work with and how those managers are paired. So are we getting rewarded for taking on that additional complexity and seeking those excess returns? And the three charts that we've got here is one, a quarterly attribution to say relative to a very simple policy index, are we outperforming? And you know, on the very high level, in the last quarter, we beat this very simple policy index mainly because we were overweight to growth markets. Despite a volatile period, our growth markets did provide a boost for Cicera to beat this simple policy index. Understanding, too, that growth markets allocation includes a lot of disparate things. It's real estate, public and private equity, private credit, private real assets. So we're bringing a lot of additional complexity there to beat a simple benchmark, and it's working.
And maybe we'll pause for a moment and just talk about the simple policy index, because that's a new concept that we're introducing here. This is really just intended to say, if we had to assign a easily investable public market proxy for each functional sub-portfolio, what would be an easy benchmark to represent that? And so we have a broad equity benchmark to represent the growth allocation. We have a short duration government, treasury and government benchmark to represent liquidity, and we have a treasury exposure to represent the diversifying, with the idea that if there's a simple option available, everything we're doing should be adding value to that. It needs to be adding value to that in order to have, you know, for the program to be working properly. And so it's kind of a foil for simplicity. We get into a lot of complex investment vehicles. I think the discussions can you know, trend towards, like as Jeff was saying, you know, we're talking about private equity, private credit, private real estate. These get complex. Are they doing what we intend them to do? Provide long-term capital appreciation. And this is just meant to say, you know, from a functional basis, are we in line with our expectations there? And so this is a tool we use internally at the staff level. We're showing it to the trustees here just to kind of further the conversation. This isn't the same as the benchmark in the Verisk report. This is a very, very simple internal proxy.
What's the and you may have already answered this and I missed it, but what's the basis of the allocation in the simple policy index?
It is the allocation to growth, liquidity, and diversifying that we maintain, the current allocations of those three.
So question, is there like a target fixed target or a range?
These are target allocations based upon the phase 2B implementation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the Cicera total fund allocation, 2170 and 950. Respective yep. on the left, and then the policy index has, 2761 and 12. So yep. I was trying to.
So this is the current investment resolution that we're under. There will be a phase three investment resolution coming forward shortly, but this is the current investment resolution that we're operating under. So these are the top level allocations to the growth sub portfolio at that 61%, to liquidity at 27%, and to risk diversifying at 12%. We know we've had a discussion about adjusting those numbers, but the investment resolution that we're operating under right now uses these targets.
They always kept the same from our January 24th. That was like kind of our target, though, right?
Sorry, my eyesight's not that good. this is the current allocation, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And it's going to fluctuate how much? Up and down the market.
Yeah, this is where we come back to the board on an annual basis and say, have the capital market assumptions moved dramatically, and do we want to make adjustments? We had this discussion in March.
where we talked about getting some direction from the board to revise the size of the risk diversifying, the size of the liquidity program, because that changes every year. And we'll need to come back with an investment resolution to actually codify those in the next couple of weeks here. But we'll always reflect on the simple policy index, what the current investment resolution is. And if we had done nothing else but just invest in the most representative, simple proxy for that in the public markets, which you can do on a very low cost basis, what would that implementation have looked like?
So this may be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
There is no dumb question.
There you go. So
there is. Asking
questions. We'll take a vote.
I think I know the answer to this question, but is there any meaningful external index or measurement against which to measure our total total fund performance in this context? Thinking about, I mean, what we're really doing is we're comparing ourselves to ourselves, right, really here, in a sense, about looking about how we're meeting a target or what the investment, yeah, current policy is. I don't know if there's a meaningful external index. I suspect there's not. That's what I'm asking, because Jerry raised this point earlier in a different context about, yep, managers, but it's the same issue.
So this is really, as Jeff alluded to earlier, we're measuring each functional sub-portfolio against its stated goals. The goals become the benchmark in this exercise. The goals of liquidity, the goals of a diversifying effect, the goals of long-term capital appreciation. So we're not taking away the external measurements versus very discrete indices and versus peer comparison. That resides in the Verisk report. You already have that. So what we're intending to do here is a complementary report that talks about the function of each sub-portfolio can be a little bit different than how other plans are using these tools. And so this dials into what are we hoping to get out of each one of these managers, each one of the sub-portfolios, and offer a little bit more insight as dialed into, this is Sarah use of these managers. So it's entirely complementary. Verisk report does not go away. Nothing gets taken away from there. But this just talks about the functions might be a little bit different than what is broadly defined as success in the peer group or by other plan sponsors.
Okay. Ed?
Mr. Hoffman?
I had a question. I understand what you're doing conceptually, but the wording of simple policy index, because it's not actually in policy, should we take away the word policy or else actually codify it in the investment policy?
We can certainly take away policy and talk about a simple index.
And I guess kind of going along that same thought is we could actually model out what the simple policy index looks like from a risk return and scenario analysis and all that kind of stuff that we do with our asset allocation and start to build that into the various modeling of the portfolio, which could be helpful down the road.
It could be. Again, this was intended to be kind of a reality check. For everything we're doing, all the implementation, there's a lot of work involved. There's always a simpler version. What does that simpler version look like? And are we getting compensated for the additional work that we're taking on or the additional asset classes that we're including for diversification purposes?
Quick question, follow-up. On page 2 at the top, in the middle column, it says simple policy index and the allocation. We have 27%, 61%, and 12%. Are those numbers that are taken from the current investment?
Yes.
Investment resolution that the board adopted?
The phase 2B investment resolution, yes. Yep. Okay. So those will always be the numbers that the board has adopted.
Yeah. Yep. The current numbers that the board has adopted for the asset allocation.
Correct.
That's probably the best way to title that index. That's a little wordy, I know, but yeah. I mean.
I know, policy gets a little,
yeah, I mean,
we treat it as the simple policy index.
Investment resolution index or whatever.
Current asset allocation.
Right.
Targets.
Yeah.
Targets. Target range. That might be better. Target
allocation allocation index, probably.
Yeah. Hi.
Something about that word policy.
I'm seeing if I can do an acronym out of it.
Keep working.
Board asset allocation target.
We have to fit it onto the page as well. So it's, point taken on the language there.
Though. Now it works. CAAT.
Hey, an acronym.
It's the cat.
Is that going to change every time we update the IPS?
Right. Every time we update the investment resolution. Yeah. So when we do that annual refresh of the investment resolution, talk about the resizing of the liquidity program.
So on this page, that top chart is always going to be quarterly, backward looking.
Yeah, so this does track those changes through time to link it historically, and we'll see that later in the report.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea behind the page, and I think that was a great question earlier. If I had to vote, I would vote that was a good question.
I'm talking about Jay. Thank you very much.
The caveat is that I'm just the alternate, though. So most times my vote doesn't count.
We're working here. Yeah.
I think. Typically, though, you would see the kind of the performance attribution and see like the result, right? Which is the top chart, and the bottom two charts seem like they try and capture how much risk you took to get that top result. So to measure the complexity of the total fund versus the simple policy index, there could be a case where maybe you just match the simple policy index for a quarter. And at that kind of magnitude is, or that dimension, it seems a little difficult to capture. Like the risk side of the risk return trade-off.
We can, that's a great point in terms of capturing what is the, either addition or subtraction of risk in the implementation versus what was in the simple indices. We could take a look at something like that.
Tim, could you define market capture for the second chart?
Sure, actually, Jeff, I'll have you define that.
Sure. Yeah, so again, we want to look, for this report, we want to look at the total fund as the outcome of the underlying functions working well and the profile that we would expect that to produce. When we look at that, we'd say market capture would be how much of a defined market are we participating in one direction or the other. And you can define the market with one benchmark or a variety of benchmarks. As we've defined the market capture here, we're defining the market as the simple policy target asset allocation index that we've discussed. You know, the very investable, the MSCI ACWI, Bloomberg Barclays 1-3 Gov Credit, and the 91-day T-bills held at the target allocations. If that defines what the market is doing, how much of that market are we capturing?
So what's the ideal, I think just to give the board a sense of what this chart is really showing, like where do we want to hit to be where we want to be at?
I think there's probably not a specific number, but there's a more importantly a spread.
Yeah.
So that the blue line is the upside and the orange line is the downside, you always want to have a spread in there that we're capturing more of the market rise than we are of the market fall. And if we do that consistently, we should have a relatively smooth return stream that would, on a graph, be kind of up and to the right over time. And so this we're looking at, we capture roughly between 90 and 95% of the market rise, and we capture between, at the low end, 45, and at the high end, 75 of the market fall. So we're participating in more upside than downside over time, which is good. That's what we want to do. We're participating in rising markets, and we're protecting in falling markets.
So as a trustee, they wouldn't want to see a narrow gap between these two lines.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you certainly wouldn't want to see them inverted.
Right. Now, we would say this gap might be unsustainably large. A certain narrowing of the spread might be natural. But certainly, we want to see it crossing, and we want to maintain that spread. It's the entire concept of the downside protection and the winning by not losing.
So, Tim, what's the driver behind what appears to be a pretty sharp increase in the downside market capture in the last quarter?
This is a rolling three-year number?
It's a rolling three-year number.
Okay. I would have to go back and take a look at that. I suspect this is a situation where, because there has not been a whole lot of volatility in the market over that three-year period, any potential downside, so if the downside scenario was down 1-3%, and if we were down slightly more than that, you have a, so this is all measured as percentage capture. Mm-hmm. So if the market or if this simple policy index was down 1% and we were down 1.3%, you'd have a pretty big, you know, 130% capture or something like that. Certainly, we're not seeing 130%, but we're seeing a tick up there from 45 to 65. I think it is a function of low volatility in the marketplace more than anything else, but we can go back and decompose that.
The understanding, too, the bulk of this drive is coming from there being a lag between establishing a target and implementing to that target. So if you look at our moats, you know, our allocation relative to the target, we're 9% overweight to broad growth markets. That helped us this quarter. But since that target was established, we've been consistently overweight growth markets where you're going to have more volatility. So relative to a target index, we are overweight growth. As growth goes, we will tick along at a greater rate. And so where there is volatility in growth or where there has been even in kind of small amounts, we're going to overly participate in it relative to the target allocation.
But again, I think the important thing is we still have a very healthy spread between the two.
And this is just personal preference, and if no one else has this issue, if there could be a few horizontal grid lines, because the x-axis is pretty long.
I think there are horizontal grid lines. And
it's just the copying.
In the copying, they disappeared. But okay. We'll certainly work on that.
Yeah. Okay, right. Thank you.
So a general comment, I'm just listening to the variety of comments here and questions. I'm thinking that, I mean, part of what this is trying to do, I think, is to address the, I think we called it the Sackers elevator issue, which is the ability to intelligently discuss our FFP program in relation to other plans and systems that are doing something very different. So I'm thinking that what there may be value in thinking about, just off the top right now, is sort of a layered approach here, so that you have a top level view, a mid-range view, and a much deeper dive. Because I think that a lot, just from the get-go, pages 1, 2, and 3, there's a lot going on, right? There's a lot of discussion. There are a lot of metrics that are being thrown. So it seems to me the most important thing for us to know, just at the very basic level, is we're meeting or not meeting our target objectives, which I think I said was the current asset allocation target index, right? We either are or we're not meeting that, right? And then, so I guess I would think about this in layers. We take it, that's the most basic element and level of performance. We're comparing ourselves, our performance against the targets that we've set. Mm-hmm. And then with each of the subjects and with each of the elements of our portfolio, liquidity or whatever, we either are or aren't making our benefit payments. We obviously are. So I mean, we either are or aren't meeting our growth target. I would restructure this in a way that might try to hit the top line targets first in a very straightforward way, and then take it maybe two levels subsequent on a deeper dive.
And we agree completely. I think we intended to structure this in just that manner. I think, you know, the first time we're going through, we're kind of explaining some of the mechanics of it a bit more, and we take your feedback very seriously. We'll go back and restructure this, but maybe Jeff, can you go back to the first page and talk about that status bar? Because I think that really is intended to be that top-level discussion of, okay, are we hitting the big picture targets? And then we can kind of drill down through.
That's the right green column,
yep,
just, though.
So that status.
Where we think we're at, right?
Precisely.
Got it. All right.
Yeah, so, you know, we want to set this up so that we could line up, similar to your comments of, you know, what is the objective that we're trying to achieve? How are we going to measure it, and what's the status? So objective one, the near-term benefit payments, that's the liquidity program. We're measuring it by cash flow and quality of the liquidity program. The status, if you remember through 2017, we were producing quite a bit of excess cash on a monthly basis relative to what we needed, somewhere closer to 107%. We tailored that model at the end of 2017. Through 2018, we've been closer to 102%. So in terms of the objectives, that discrete objective, you know, we are more closely tracking the cash flow needs that we have without producing too much excess cash. We don't want to take out more from the program than we need to.
Right.
And then in terms of the metrics around, is this program sized appropriately? Does it have appropriate risk measures in terms of quality, duration? That's on the liquidity page that follows this. When we look at, you know, the future benefit payments, everything year four plus, that resides in the growth portfolio. And so there we say, you know, how should we very simply measure the growth portfolio? We'd say we want to have strong risk-adjusted returns. You can measure that with a Sharpe ratio. And then a performance versus, you know, kind of a straight performance versus a benchmark. If the benchmark is investable, that's always available to us. We could move there if we're not adding value above it. And as you get further into the staff report, you'd see that most of our investment managers are meeting the objective of the growth portfolio. There are some exceptions, of course, and there inevitably will be. And preserving capital in down markets, as we talked to on that upside downside capture, that's an important objective in terms of kind of the path of returns that we want to have at the total fund. And that's really the role of the risk diversifying portfolio to give us something of a hedge against the growth portfolio and allow us to mechanically rebalance when we see markets have a strong sell-off or a downturn. We want to have a pool of assets that we can deploy, purchase additional growth assets at depressed prices, and then participate in the recovery. That's the status of that. That's a program that we're actively in the process of building out. This board voted in February to retain an additional manager for that program, so that's underway.
Where's the simplest place to go to find which managers are in growth and diversifying?
If you get to the back of the report, we have each manager has kind of their own dedicated page in right. The appendix. So there's a liquidity portfolio, growth portfolio appendix.
Is that everybody? I was looking at this. Is that everybody currently?
Everybody currently. What it doesn't do, most specifically for the growth portfolio, because there are so many private equity, private real estate managers, and where private credit will eventually reside, it doesn't break out each one of those managers individually, but rather looks at them in the aggregate.
So the report is meant to be first two pages, top line, you know, what are we expecting from each of the functional sub-portfolios, then is the implementation being, you know, conducted in an appropriate manner. And if there's a question about liquidity portfolio, we have a page on liquidity portfolio on page three,
right.
Growth and risk diversifying on four and five, and these are the top level. Is the portfolio functioning as expected? Now, to your question, if you want to get into inside the growth portfolio, where should I be concerned? And Jerry, this kind of addresses your watch list questions. Then you get into the appendix, and when we step down to color coding on the manager basis, what are we expecting? What's our thesis behind every manager? What are we expecting them to do? Are they meeting our expectations, or do we see a cause for concern? And then we color code those. And so, I mean, if we turn to page eight, for example.
Tim, could we go back one step to kind of build on what Scott's talking about? To me, this is a layered approach. It's obviously a layered approach, and it talks about results. It's still missing, in my estimation, this cover page that sort of narratively tells people what the overall objectives are of FFP. It says, here's all the results, but it doesn't say really what we're trying to accomplish. So where do we stand on that overall narrative that we could pull out of our hip pocket if we needed it in the elevator?
We have drafts of that, and I'm roping you and Scott into that. You'd volunteered previously to take a look at that, but yeah.
So, because we've got pieces.
Point taken.
Two, three, four, five, and six. I think we're still missing page one. Okay.
Yeah. I was going to get back to what I was asking earlier. Like, I have that one cheat sheet I keep. Is there a way to make a cheat sheet so I'll know which manager in the growth and which one's in a diversifying?
So a couple of things on that. One, obviously, you can go back to the Verus tracking booklet in there.
Right.
But also, you know, in every month, the first board meeting of the month, we have the asset allocation as a consent item. That's kind of that's a cheat sheet that I actually use quite a bit. Because I mean, it's more than one sheet. It's a, you know, like three pages. But
they're all labeled as two.
But it's all labeled, and it's a real just a, you know, a real quick, you know, cheat sheet on who's in which.
Can you reduce it down so it sits on the back side of our business cards?
Yeah.
Oh, good idea.
How good is your vision?
I'm at 250 right now. So.
And we'd also talked about, at the same time that the elevator speech was mentioned, having a Q&A on our website so that anyone in the public could go and that's something we're developing also.
Yep. It's just, it's worth I think continuing to let people, the old adage in communications is you tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them, then tell them what you told them.
What you told them.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and over.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, people could look at our performance or the next time there's an RVK or RV Coons report at Sackers, and they could think, oh my gosh, what are those folks doing? Right. But then when you explain it to them, oh, we're having, you know, 4 years of benefit payments and liquidity, and we have growth, so we're able to, you know, take on more risk and return there, and then we have, you know, risk diversifying, which has low correlation to growth, that's has liquidity, that has, you know, some sort of return there. You know, when you give them that bigger picture, it makes sense. And I definitely understand the need that trustees have for that.
You're doing a good job, Gail.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like that?
It's good.
Is that easy to understand?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Write that
there
down.
There it is. Instead of this thing.
Drawing on Mr. Holcomb's point, for me anyway, it would be helpful in this middle chart, this CSERA total fund chart, some definition going forward of how these two lines are calculated. I'm thinking of a line or two.
Yeah.
I've attempted to follow the descriptions, and it's still hazy to me quite okay. What they mean. So if that's possible, I suggest that as a
Appreciate the feedback. So I think we've got some additional steps here. I think perhaps we just want to comment briefly on the manager basis where we're seeing some areas of concern and areas of strength. And Jeff, can we walk through that?
Sure. So
actually, I'm sorry. Before we leave that page, can we talk about the bottom chart? And with the formatting, it was hard for us to, it might be hard to read what that says.
Which page are we on now? Sorry, I've lost track.
Two. Page two.
Two. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. At the bottom, if you could just walk through that with them, because it might be hard for them to read.
Yeah. Sure. So this is.
Kind of looks like Gabe at the target range.
Yes. Me and Barney Fife.
This looks like another kind of, I mean, part of this is it is a small chart, so it will be hard to read. The other part seems to be kind of a copying dispersion here. But effectively what we're trying to show is that, you know, for CSERA's total fund, we want to earn a higher return than our risk would otherwise indicate we should. And what I mean by that is we want to have high risk adjusted returns. We want to get more units of return per unit of risk than our peers. And so when we look at that over different time periods, though it's hard to read, green would be 3 years, gray would be 5 years, blue would be 10 years, we should be kind of higher than our peers and closer to the left. Over 3 and 5 years, that's the case. Over 10 years, less so. That we are in a there's no X and Y axis on this because we're using different time periods so that you wouldn't be able to center on one specific axis. But think of it as the northwest quadrant is where we want to be. If risk is on your X axis, return is on your Y axis. We want to be lower risk, higher return.
So we want to engineer that northwest quadrant. And here you can see versus those peer groups, we're tending to be up in that northwest quadrant of those
Bob Hillison's education.
Should there be a footnote identifying what we call peers?
This is the same universe that we can footnote it. That's not a problem at all. But for your reference, this is the same universe that's used in the VIRS report data.
The public funds above a
billion dollars.
Yeah.
Yep.
So is there any value on this one? As much as I enjoy scatter diagrams, is there any value in this being staccato bullet narrative? We either did or didn't outperform peers on a three-year basis, five-year basis.
I think what I'm hearing is there's desperate need of a cover page that has just those bullet points.
Yeah, just to say maybe what's not necessarily obvious, and unless you take a lot of time to look at each of those dots and understand what they are relative to one another, just if we outperformed, then we outperformed. If we didn't, we didn't. And if not, by how much, and if there's a need for a short explanation, why?
Yep.
That's what I'm thinking.
No need to even have this. The dot one you're saying,
in lieu.
Yeah, me it's.
I agree.
Yeah, it's.
It's not answering a question for you.
Yeah, but I would still like to have the peer group explanation somewhere, just so I can remember the billion over where the index is.
Yep. I think, you know, the overarching goal here was to answer the questions that we vet internally and communicate that to the trustees. But I take your feedback. Yeah, I welcome your feedback because I want to answer the questions for the trustees as well. So some of these are tools that we use internally, but we need to adapt those to the broader communication. And Jerry, to your point of, you know, a cover page that kind of creates some context, I think is a good idea there too.
Well, to me, the manager performance chart was excellent, right? I could say it was good because that was the green bar, right?
Yeah.
It's that to me is in a snapshot. I can look down at that and quickly see what the amber is or the red is, right? Understand who that is, and then to the extent action is required or vigilance is the right answer, then you'll note that. But that to me, that's the kind of thing I got a lot out of. I could look at that and just quickly go, oh, we know who's lagging and who's not, right?
So a color-coded analysis of the top line goals as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's taking a lot of information and portraying it in a straightforward way. I don't want to say simple, but it's a straightforward way that you can't help but look at that and understand what it just told you. You can't miss it. Even I couldn't miss it. So there you go.
Even you?
Even me.
Can we vote on that too?
Yeah. I'm going to let Jay tell you what he thought.
Thumbs up. Here we go. Okay.
All right. Sure, we can. We're taking all the feedback. We've got notes all over our pages, so your next report will look very different.
This is a lot of information. So yeah. This is intended to be. These are. There's a lot of preferences around here, but it's intended to be constructive, right?
No,
it's a lot of good stuff.
I think the top line the takeaways here are liquidity program is working as expected, and we'll do a little bit deeper dive next. Growth largely working as expected and being implemented effectively, with a couple of caveats on the manager level, but nothing that rises to the level of a red flag for us. So areas that we're keeping an eye on, Jerry, to your point, I think William Blair with the portfolio manager turnover, that's an area of concern. Yes. We're not seeing it actually manifest in any material way in the portfolio yet, but we've had several meetings with them trying to get comfortable with the new structure there. We're certainly seeing a decline in assets at Ceradex and Adelante. They're noteworthy, but we're not seeing any kind of damage to the firm's, you know.
How much do we have with Adelante? Is it like still 400,000?
No, it's very small.
70 million.
So we've really dropped it down. Okay.
We've dropped it by 80% over the years with the build out of the private program.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the other noteworthy thing you're going to see there is on the private equity side, we're looking for a premium over public markets. Certainly a year like last year when public markets are up 20%+, the premium over a public markets benchmark is not an investable benchmark. We wish it were. We would create an index fund and walk away from everything if we could just get 400 basis points over the S&P 500 all the time. But a year like last year, the private markets are not going to be able to match that kind of anomalously large public market growth, so we're going to see a lag there. Over a longer period of time, we would expect that gap to close. And I think on the risk diversifying side, Jeff, you want to comment on that?
Sure. Risk diversifying. What page are you on?
I'm sorry, we're on page 11 now. Okay. So we're just kind of going through the color coding here.
So risk diversifying, again, this is a program that we're actively building out. Looking at these metrics in terms of, you know, how correlated are you to the broad growth markets? This is the second table. You know, generally negative correlation, that's kind of what we're looking for. That should give us some zig to the growth market zag. Where we have highlighted in yellow are the 1 and 5 year returns, where these are low numbers, sometimes low negative numbers. Ideally, these would be at least positive real returns. So if you stripped out inflation, that these would numbers would be more positive. We think Parametric joining the program should help that over time. But otherwise, that's kind of the note there, that while there are positive returns or negative returns, we ultimately want positive real returns.
Is there a target correlation for the risk diversifying allocation?
There's not a target correlation. I think when we review strategies that would fill in for this program, we said we want a low correlation that has a market link. And with that, we excluded things that would be natural resource related, such as, you know, catastrophe bonds or insurance linked strategies that wouldn't be ultimately linked to the broader growth market, though they would be lowly correlated. Kind of the easy anecdote being that there's nothing that stops a hurricane doesn't know if it's a recession or not, it just comes. And so you don't want to be holding those bonds in that type of environment. We'd like to see something that has a more mechanical link to growth markets so that there could be an established zig and zag pattern.
Operationally speaking, we were looking at a 0.4 and lower, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when something came in, yeah, 0.4 or higher,
we asked a lot of questions about is this 0.4 over a very strange time period, or is there a structural basis here? But I think if things were kind of in the 0.4 to 0.8 range, there's less likely to be a candidate for that allocation.
Perfect. And just a reminder for the risk diversifying program, what our top line objectives are would be a low correlation to broad growth markets. A negative correlation would be even better if you can also get a positive carry, so an actual positive return over distinct periods, and high liquidity. So if you could have all of those things, that we would consider that to be a good risk diversifying program, understanding that there's probably not one asset or asset class that does that, so we'll look to build it with a number of different managers and strategies.
Just speaking of parametric, at some point in the future, can we kind of get an update on how that's going?
We're still in the contracting phase at this point, yeah.
Okay.
But yes, we can. Okay, I think we've got our marching orders for the next
I want to compliment you on this, even though I've got some questions about, I think the watch list thing that I mentioned earlier, I understand we're doing this quarterly, I understand you're bringing it up like this, but I do remember once having one of our fund managers on the watch list, and they came to us and asked, how can I get off your watch list because it's affecting my business? And you know, we talked about, this was like 5 years ago that this happened, but it happened, and it made an influence on them. And I think these people need to know that the ones that we would consider for watch list, to know that we're concerned, and just be aware that we're concerned, and hopefully your numbers will go up, or the market will do something in your favor down the road. We're riding with you, but we're concerned. And I'm sure you probably do that, but we need to know that that's going on. And that's the only thing I have. But the report itself, I thought was very good, held my interest. I kept reading it and wanting to I had questions here and there, but the answers were showing up as I was reading.
Right.
And I'm thankful for this. I know this is the first full presentation you did, and I'm looking forward to these in the future. So I want to compliment you and your staff on this report.
Thank you. We'll bring it back in hopefully a even better form next quarter.
Yeah.
And Jerry, to your point on the watch list and managers seeing it and, oh my gosh, this is having an impact. I mean, we can also communicate to them, hey, this is this new package. It's going in the board packet. This is
what's happening.
You know, this is being communicated to our board in this format, which is a similar type.
Great.
You know,
yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. I suspect what we, I don't suspect, we don't see what happens or hear what happens on their manager calls, right? I'm sure concerns are communicated. I'm sure they're done in a professional and direct manner, but that's something that we don't see. So that's part of, I think, to Jerry's comment, I think the watch list is the symbolic evidence of that, where if you don't have it, then you didn't know that it occurred kind of thing.
And we do highlight, you know, what's going on in personnel changes and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was surprised Stephanie left FIMCO.
Exactly, me
I
too. Me too.
It struck me, that surprised me.
Even though she's client service, she's a big part of what they represented.
So.
Anything else?
We'll look forward to version 3.0 next quarter.
Perfect. Thank you. So, item 4 now, review of report.